Okay, so this is Becca Braun interviewing Eric Salazar on October 22nd. Hi, Eric.
Hi.
I was wondering if you could talk about how you became interested in music, and specifically the clarinet.
That's good. I love this because it's actually cartoons that got me into clarinet. Did not grow up in a musical family. We didn't have any kind of live music growing up. I just grew up in a very rural area of family of non-musicians. But I did love Tom and Jerry a lot. I watched Tom and Jerry every day. And there's a lot of classical music in Tom and Jerry.
Right.
And I feel like it was Rhapsody in Blue, which has a great clarinet solo in the beginning, or some kind of equivalent prominent clarinet sound. But I heard it when I was a kid, and I was like, I want to do that. I don't know what it is, but I want to do that. And so then when we started learning about instruments in general music, I heard the clarinet and saw a picture of it, and I was like, yes, that's it. That's what I want to play. I want to play the clarinet. So in sixth grade, we got to choose instruments, and I very, like, vehemently only would try clarinet. They asked me, they're like, what about drums? Like, kids love drums. I was like, no, clarinet. And then I was really small. I was a really little kid, like super tiny. And so as we were learning clarinet, there's the tone holes on the clarinet. Mm-hmm. And if you can't cover them all the way, you squeak a lot. And so my band directors sort of got tired of hearing that, so they switched me over to bass clarinet.
Oh my goodness.
Pretty early on, which they wanted me to do saxophone because saxophone has buttons. And I was like, nope, no way, only clarinet. So they sort of like coaxed me into doing something that was good for me by using bass clarinet because it also has buttons. And then in terms of what made me actually want to be a professional musician was that I was in a jazz band at my high school. I was in the lowest jazz band at my high school. But I could play loud, so they had me solo on bass clarinet. And we did the Purdue Jazz Festival every year. And one year we won an award called the Judge's Choice Award. And that was really great, and I happened to play a solo that day. And then later on in the school year, we were sort of, the jazz band was playing a concert, and one of our band directors, he grabbed the microphone and started talking to the audience, and I was a kid, so I was sort of like just ignoring him. But then he started saying some really interesting things that caught my ear, and he said that we went to the Purdue Jazz Festival, and we won this award because this band is very special. And he goes, we won the Judge's Choice Award, and I've been doing this for 30 years, and I've never even heard of this award, so I think they invented it for us. And then he went on to say, and I believe that the reason we got this award is because of our bass clarinet soloist, Eric Salazar. And he, like, pointed at me and told me to stand up. And so the whole auditorium was, like, applauding and cheering and everything. And I just remember thinking in that moment, I remember thinking, look at how happy all these people are. And all I did was play my instrument. And then I was like, I think I'm going to just play my instrument for the rest of my life so I can keep doing this for people. And that's what made me audition at Ball State and become a music major.
Neat. Wow, that's very cool. Can you talk about your time at Ball State and kind of who your mentors were and how it prepared you for the next step you took after?
Sure, yeah. So I had an interesting journey in that, you know, we didn't have the luxury of private lessons growing up that a lot of my peers have. So a lot of my peers have that, you know, oh, I started taking lessons when I was 11, or the string players when I was 6. And we just didn't have that where I'm from. So I sort of barely took a handful of lessons on bass clarinet when I was 17 and 18. And that was enough for me to be able to audition at schools of music like Ball State. But I actually didn't get accepted anywhere because of that that standard that, you know, we just didn't know existed in my family. Like, we had no idea what the standard was.
Mm-hmm.
So I did sort of the thing that most Salazars do, and I just went here anyway and asked to be a music minor. And then I figured, like, I'll just get in the door and then work my way up. And that is what happened. So my first year, I was an undecided major, technically, and a music minor. Because, again, I just wasn't at that level of an incoming freshman performance major. But I took lessons with a graduate assistant. Her name's Andrea Hoyt. She is now a professor at ISU of clarinet. And then later in the year, I took lessons with Dr. Crawford, who's still the clarinet professor here. And I worked really hard during those years here. And I sort of had what a lot of music majors have, where you have a very full schedule of practicing, rehearsing, and performing. And that is exactly what I needed, because I sort of came from nothing in terms of my playing and rehearsal ability. They're just, the information was not there where I was from. So it was really good for me. I did chamber music every semester because I love it, and I didn't have to do that, but I did. And that was really good because there's no, like, you can't hide in chamber music. Like, you can hide in concert band, or if you're a string player in orchestra. So I practiced a lot. And sort of the first big thing I did was I almost insanely practiced my scales. I did more of that than I think anyone else did. Just like hours of scales. Because scales to me, Dr. Crawford, you know, really impressed upon me that scales are your fundamentals. It's the foundation of how you play. And so scales were the gateway to getting better at playing for me. They were the gateway to success, because I was very well aware of my skill level and how I compared to my peers. I sat like sort of in the lowest chair of the lowest band my first year, because I was just so far behind. But thanks to Dr. Crawford and my chamber music coaches, which were Dr. Swager and Dr. Watanabe, I was able to get much better. And I took a jury, I think, every semester, or gave a recital every semester. And even though I came in late as a major, I still graduated in 4 years. And during that time, I gained the technical proficiency that I needed to get accepted into a master's program at Bowling Green State University.
Very cool. So what were you hoping to do at Bowling Green? Was that another performance degree? Were you hoping to just continue to build upon the skills that you had acquired here?
Yeah, I really wanted... I went for another performance degree, and I've got a really cool piece of paper now that says Master of Music, so that feels good. But yeah, I really... By that time, I had known, because I had done so much chamber music here at Ball State, that chamber music was going to be a big part of my future. I wasn't really sure yet, because I was still so young, in terms of what my career would actually look like long term, but I knew chamber music was a part of that. And at Bowling Green, you've got some liberty in terms of what chamber ensembles you form. Because at Bowling Green, contemporary classical music is extremely important at that university. So there's a lot of versatility in what you can do with chamber music, because you can put together these ensembles that are not the traditional combination of instruments. So one of the best memories I have at Bowling Green is I formed a chamber ensemble that was saxophone, flute, clarinet, and percussion. and we participated in the Douglas Whalen Chamber Music Competition, which is held at Bowling Green every year. And we won that competition in the graduate division. And I think if I hadn't done so much chamber music at Ball State, I would not have been prepared to, because I've always sort of fallen into leadership roles with whatever I do, and I was sort of the person that made us rehearse the way we did, which was a very healthy and productive way. And then winning that competition with new music made me realize that that's what I want a big component of my career to be. So it's sort of all like one step led to another, getting to do so much chamber music here, then winning that competition at Bowling Green, and then graduating and forming my own professional ensemble.
Wow. Can you talk about your professional ensemble that you founded?
Of course. Yeah, we're Forward Motion, and we are an Indianapolis-based new music ensemble, and we play works exclusively, almost exclusively, by living composers. And so sort of the other core element to our voice is that we are not afraid to use electronics and also to improvise. So we have this nice blend of playing like the hard repertoire that Eighth Blackbird plays, like Missy Mazzoli's Still Life with Avalanche, and then we'll combine that with pieces that use electronics. And then a lot of times we will literally just tell the audience, hey, we're going to improvise now, and we'll just do improv on the spot. And sort of our mission with Forward Motion is to, of course, primarily bring excellent new music and new music collaborations to the public of Indianapolis and the surrounding Midwest areas. But we also have a secondary focus of helping Indianapolis exist as a part of the national new music conversation. So we love being there and being one of the premier ensembles of the area, but it's not all about us. We really want contemporary artists to feel like they can come to Indianapolis and we'll put them up, we'll play great shows with them, and that there is an audience for this genre in Indianapolis.
Nice. And how have you been able to commission new pieces and, you know, pay the performers in the group?
Yeah, that's always the thing. So it's a combination of soliciting donations and applying for grants. We are not a nonprofit organization yet, but we are filing very soon, and it's a few month process. So by the end of 2019, I'll be the executive director of a nonprofit organization, which is a fun thought.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we solicit donations, and we're going the nonprofit route because our music isn't really mainstream. So going the for-profit route, there's so much selling involved in the for-profit route. And since our music's not super mainstream, that's just a challenge. So we're going nonprofit and solicit donations. And we've been able to work with a few different Indiana composers because that's sort of how we're helping Indiana exist in the national new music world, is we're showcasing works by Hoosiers. We solicit donations, we sell tickets, and that allows us to pay ourselves, which is a great feeling when you get to hand your friends a check for playing the music you love. And we just recorded a piece by Rob Funkhauser, who's a Butler alumni and an Indianapolis composer and electronic musician. And the piece is called Reflect and Release. And it's super great because it's five movements, and the outer movements, our instrumentation is flute, clarinet, violin, cello, piano, and percussion. And in the outer movements, everyone puts away their normal instruments and we all play percussion instruments.
Wow.
And Rob designed this really cool effect with toms where he connected these plastic tubes to toms, and we blow into those plastic tubes, which changes the pitch of the tom as we're hitting it.
That's cool.
It's super cool, and I can't wait to share that recording. We just recorded it in the studio, so that'll be in the world, hopefully early 2019.
Oh, how neat. Congratulations.
Yeah. Yay.
Yeah. Can you also talk about some of the other professional things that you're doing outside of Forward Motion?
Yeah, sure. I'm blessed to be, I guess people feel comfortable enough around me because I've done all kinds of collaborations. I've played with bluegrass musicians. I play currently with a psychedelic rock band. I've played jazz, folk, singer-songwriter. I'm going to help record an album with another BSU alumni, Katie Geringer, who's a singer-songwriter in New York. She's coming back and having me play some clarinet on that. But I also primarily perform my own compositions for clarinet and electronics, and I use a pedal loop station system to combine a lot of really cool electronic effects with the traditional clarinet sound. Because for me, I believe that when you take the best parts of the classical tradition, which is writing and reading music, and combine that with the best parts of the natural organic way we learn music, which is learning by ear and playing by ear, when those two merge, that's what I think produces the best effect in terms of my own playing. So I always write things that are composed, but also have some playing by ear and some improvisation involved. And I guess it's good enough because I have a solo album out with Centaur Records, which is a pretty prominent classical music label. And that's just fun to have out under the age of 30.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can you talk about, you know, any advice you have for current Ball State students that might be getting close to graduation?
Some philosophical things and then some really tangible things. But mainly, I mentioned this last night, but experiment while you can here. Because right now, it might not seem like you have a ton of time with all the classes you have to take and all the practicing you have to do. But compared to when you have to start paying bills with your career, you have a ton of time right now. So when you graduate, you're going to have to use that time to pay the bills. So there's going to be way less room to try new things, way less room to really chase after your own artistic vision. You might have to do gigs that aren't your favorite or get part-time job. You will have to get a part-time job. I'm not going to sugarcoat that for you. So while you're here, take the time to chase after what your dream is right now, because when you graduate, you're going to have less time to do it. So that's my advice, is experiment now. If you've got an idea but don't know how to do it, ask your mentors or your peers to help you do it. Because it does you no good to just conceive these ideas and sort of save them for when you're a professional, because when you are a professional, there's going to be less time to chase after those ideas. And then sort of the other thing that I always encourage is that, you know, while you're here, you got to listen to your mentors because they're so well-established and they know so much and they're sharing it with you. But sort of the sooner you can believe that you are an artist and not just a student, the better off you're going to be in terms of what experience you're gaining right now. And they're not mutually exclusive. Like, you can be a student and an independent artist with a vibrant artistic vision. You can be both, but there's just an archetype of people that I found that I graduated with who excelled in school. They were tremendous, and I was sometimes just in awe of how well they did in school. And then when they left school, they stopped playing music because there was no one there to tell them exactly how to excel. So you need to start gaining experience as an independent artist now so that you're prepared for the reality of the world, which is not someone telling you exactly how to do everything. You have to be able to figure it out. And if you don't have that experience of being independent and being confident in your own vision, then it can seem so scary that you don't even take that first step. And I've seen so many of my colleagues do that, who I graduated with, where they don't perform anymore, even though they were the top performers at the school. And then sort of the last thing is, like, this is a non-negotiable. So if you, like, take those past two things and throw them in the trash, that's fine. But what I'm about to tell you is not negotiable. It has to happen. You must have a website, and you must have recordings posted online if you want to perform. If you don't have that, you're not going to perform because everyone else has it. So it's such a competitive field and a competitive market that when you're reaching out to set up performance opportunities, you have to have those links. So you send them to the people who are hiring musicians so they can click, view your link, see what you're about, and be like, yes, you're a good fit, and hire you. Because if you don't have that, there's going to be five people that do have it. And as someone who hires lots of musicians every year, it's no question. I hire the people who are good performers and make it easy for me. Because, like, the reality is when you graduate, everyone is good. Everyone can play just as well as you. And no one can say exactly what you can say because you have a unique voice. But everyone is as good as you are. And so you have to do what you can to make it easy for the person who's hiring to say yes. And for music, that means having a website and having recordings of yourself online. And, like, if you're someone who's nervous about posting recordings, like, sorry, you've got to do it. You got to get over that because everyone else is doing it.
Awesome.
Yay.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, this is fantastic. So I'm going to stop the recording.
All right.
So I guess I just click here. Okay. So this is